Welcome to the 77th edition of the Gooner Podcast, recorded on the Wednesday before the Premier League begins with Arsenal's trip to Newcastle. This podcast is sponsored by the website for all your unofficial Arsenal t-shirt needs,
GoonerShirts.com.
I'm your host, David Udoh, returning after a brief hiatus, which has seen Messrs Don Sebastiano and Joe Broadfoot in the chair, and my thanks to them for doing the honours in my absence. This evening, we are going to discuss the season ahead, where we feel Arsenal are in terms of readiness, and for what's to come. First up on our panel, he's not the man he was a year ago, at least in terms of backing Arsene Wenger. Perhaps the summer break has lightened his mood. We'd find out a little bit soon enough. But for now, it's a warm welcome to Mark Hollington.
Hello there. Hope you had a lovely summer.
Next, someone who last summer was on the other side of the world, but he's forsaken Japan to return to a country where the young people kick in shop windows and set light to furniture stores and electrical warehouse. He's not talked about returning to the Far East, but no one would blame him. So hello to Joe Broadfoot.
Sayonara, baby. I've got it mixed up.
Not again, Joe. All the bloody time.
It's because of you. You kept going on about sayonara, but I'll come back to that later, or not.
And finally, a panellist who has overseen a change in the design of the Gooner fanzine that is ultimately the reason for this podcast and accompanying website. Still editing the mag over a decade, so it says here, and getting more flack than ever for it. He's left his tin hat at home tonight, and he's amongst his friends. It's Kevin Witcher.
To all our Japanese listeners, konnichiwa.
That's the right one. Sorry about that, Japanese listeners, the one of you out there.
So here we are, the Wednesday afternoon before the season starts this coming Saturday. Manchester United have signed three players for the first team. Chelsea have signed a few players. But what do you make of Arsenal's activity in the summer transfer window so far? Mark?
Do you know what? Before the pre-season started, and it was obvious we needed some backup and some defensive reinforcement, the player I most wanted was Carl Jenkinson. I said to myself, "If what we really need is a player that plays for League One, has played, what, five or six games in League One, which is a lot of experience, and I'd love to have a player of that calibre and ability coming to Arsenal Football Club." In all seriousness, listeners, I do but jest. I think up to last week, until we had the young lad, what's it, Oxlade Chamberlain, or whatever he's kind of called, for £15 million.
Absolutely.
Potentially, I've never seen the guy play. Obviously, he's highly rated. He could be very good. I don't know. I think I've seen a bit of Jovino in the Emirates Cup. I watched it on the telly. I didn't go myself, but he's seemed a nifty player. Those games, though, are played at half the pace of normal Premiership matches. But the jury could potentially be out. But I do not understand. Let's get to the crux matter, the defence. With 3 days to go, the defence hasn't changed, apart from Carl Jenkinson. But we have sold Clichy. You know, don't get me wrong, I wasn't a fan of Clichy, but we've now relied on Kieran Gibbs and Traore. So the question is that when is this defensive cover going to come? And I think it's gross negligence of the highest order that we've still got the same back four central defenders that we had last season. I can't say anything much more than that, because I'm properly, genuinely gutted that we haven't signed anyone of any decent calibre. And don't really know what else to say other than I'm not optimistic for the new season. Not because I want to be, you know, some kind of pessimist. I want to be there for the first game, getting excited, getting behind the team, getting a flipping mental. But how can we know when Sebastian Scannarchi is still on the club's books? It's very difficult. I'll be quiet now.
But Joe, surely if Tottenham have only signed one player, which by the looks of it looks like a reserve goalkeeper, there's not been much going into Chelsea. Manchester City have only signed one genuine first-team player, being Sergio Aguero, and thanks to them for taking Gold Clichy off us. Surely, our movement in the summer transfer window must be okay.
It's not okay to me, because, as Mark said, we've not really strengthened the defence by bringing in a League One player who couldn't even make the first team at Charlton. It's quite disturbing, to say the least. And bringing in Jovino, I'd have to say, I think it's a good signing, but it's an area that we didn't particularly need to strengthen. But defence certainly was the area that everyone, literally everyone, said, well, you're going to sign a centre-back, so don't worry about next season. Well, have we signed a centre-back? Well, Carl Jenkinson can play there as well as at right-back. But having seen his displays at right-back, and I've studied this guy, I'm not really seeing him as pushing Sanya next season, even though he's declared on the official website that he's going to give Sanya a run for his money I personally haven't seen anything yet to indicate that that's a real possibility. I think the guy's on his heels all the time, and that could be rectified. Obviously, it's just, you know, why don't you get ready for the attacks rather than just standing on your heels? But to be fair to the guy, he can pass the ball, and you know, he's pretty quick. So he has got a decent future in the game. Whether that's going to be at Arsenal or not, I don't know. But what I've seen of him so far, I think he's got potential. But potential is what everyone's getting upset about. We want something now. We want a trophy now after all these seasons of nothingness. And Carl Jenkinson is not going to make a difference. Just to come back to a point that Mark made about Scilacci, though, I think he's been a little bit overly harsh because I know everyone says Scilacci is rubbish, and I can't say he's done a lot to prove otherwise. But one thing I would say is he does need a bit of time to settle in. He's had a year. If he doesn't start doing it this season, I'll agree with you. Okay. But so far, he's done next to nothing right. But one thing I would like to say, I noticed in the pre-season that people were having a go at Scilacci for terrible defending, and I was watching every single game and thinking, what did he do wrong? He didn't do an awful lot wrong in the pre-season, so I'm not going to have it any other way. I'm not saying he did a lot right, but he didn't do a lot wrong. And the defence was as shambolic as always, but people were blaming Scilacci for the shambles.
Did you see the first goal that Boca Juniors scored in the Emirates Cup? And who was at fault for that? Who basically let the attacker just walk past them?
Was it only Scilacci?
I believe it was Scilacci.
Well, I thought that was too easy. He's been at fault for most goals conceded in our.
But there's been some goalkeeping errors as well for some goals. And I mean, I've not heard people having a go at Fabian.
No, sorry, maybe it was the Benfica game.
I think there might have been a goal that he was partially responsible
for. There was a goal in
that was the Marlon being stitched by Pablo Aimar.
But then I'm a big fan of Johan Juru, but to be honest, he's not had a very good pre-season. And, you know, based on what I've seen, I prefer Johan Juru because he's put in some good performances at times. Compared to Scilacci's pre-season, Scilacci hasn't played as much, but in the games I've seen, I just thought It's unfair. It's unfair. People were having a go at Scilacci before balls kicked in anger.
Is he Arsenal class, Joe?
I've seen.
I'm back in improvement next season.
But I think give the guy one more year.
He's not up to it. Man, you would give him one more year. Chelsea would give him one more year. He'd be out straight away.
Well, at least he's experienced. That's more than you can say for most men.
Sorry, Kev, you had a comment.
Mikhail Silvestre was experienced. I mean, it doesn't make any good. He's had better days, Scilacci. However, the English game has exposed him for what he is, which is basically having the turning circle of a tank and the positional ability of a very bad defender, anyway. But, I mean, to get back to the general points, the transfer window isn't over. It's very unfortunate that I have left it so late, assuming that at least one central defender will be arriving, and you've got to believe one will. It just indicates to me that Arsenal are still doing the same things, which is they're acting like a small club. You know, when you are a club of Arsenal size, selling clubs are going to ask a bit more money. They're going to take the P just a little bit. And if you're a big club, you just swallow it and you just pay the money. Or you say, okay, no, we'll buy somebody else. Now, Arsenal have got this fantastic scouting system, we're led to believe. So if the money being asked for Cahill and Jagielka and Samba is too much, then you quickly identify another target and you go after them. But it seems to me that a bit like last season, all the eggs in the goalkeeping basket were on Mark Schwarzer and it all turned pear-shaped. We could face a very similar situation with centre-backs this season and potentially miss out on we need two signings, in my opinion, but, you know, miss out totally on even one the way it's going. So I refuse to believe one won't arrive. I mean, one will arrive, but it's a shame that we will be into the season and some pretty big games before they do. So not very well conducted business overall. I think we will be discussing Nasri and Fabregas later, but that's tied in with all of this. And you've got to wonder about the approach of the people who are in charge of doing the business for the club. You know, they don't seem to me to be doing a very competent job.
Moving away slightly, but we'll return to those players who have arrived. Jenkinson, Jovinho and Oxlade-Chamberlain. I suppose a more important issue at the moment are those players who may leave, because here we are on the 10th of August and there's still far too much paper talk about Nasri or Fabregas. So, Joe, I mean, do you think, or do you know if anyone thinks, that either Nasri or Fabregas will still be at Arsenal on September the 1st, or will they bugger off to Manchester City and Barcelona, respectively?
It seems, to me, it seems not much use keeping these guys. When Fabregas wants to leave, well, I don't want him to leave, but clearly he's not going to play his heart out for the club anymore. He didn't play that many games last season. So will he be a huge loss? I'd say not a huge loss if we're keeping Nasri, but for some unknown reason, we managed to let his contract run down to this point where he's going to leave next year on a free. If we don't let him go now, we can get £22 million, I'm hearing, from Manchester City if we let him go immediately. But no, suddenly we've sold Clichy to Manchester City, strengthening their team, I would say, even though that's a bit debatable. I'd say we've strengthened their team and weakened ours, and we're not prepared to do the same with Nasri. Nasri's obviously a better player than Clichy, but we're going to get decent money for him, and he's only got a year left on his contract. It's just complete, utter madness. Why sell to, you know, if in a business sense, they're our competitors. You know, in a football sense, they're our competitors. In every sense, they are. So why don't we just, if we're going to sell, well, that's the policy, sell to Manchester City. We've done it in the past. We've sold Adebayor, Kolo Touré to them. Why not sell Nasri as well? Because we don't seem to be competing for first place in the league. That's what it appears to me to be the case at the club. We're looking at third or fourth. That is the ambition. So looking at, if we're looking from a financial perspective, yes, we've got to let Fabregas go. Yes, we've got to let Nasri go. And then we could replace them from players already in the squad, like Arshavin could be played in the right position, for instance. That could be a possibility. Not as deep
players
as Fabregas.
In the right position? Are you having a laugh, Joe? Come on.
He's never been a winger, let's be honest. Arshavin was never a winger until he arrived at Arsenal.
No, I agree. It's madness.
Well, from that point of view, neither was Andre Arshavin or any other midfield player. I mean, bearing in mind they've both been stitched up terribly in terms of them playing in pre-season friendlies. I mean, Kev, is it fair enough to say that they must be on their way out?
I don't think there's any doubt about it. I mean, it's just the price that's holding things up. Arsenal being very stubborn. And I mean, in a sense, what Bolton and Everton are doing with their centre-backs, which is holding out for the big price, is what Arsenal are doing with Fabregas and Nasri. They're trying to squeeze out an extra million or two. My main truck with it is that I do think we should have a settled team going into the start of the season with no question marks. Now, okay, you say Fabregas and Nasri going, so there's no question mark there, but there's a question mark over the replacements. You know, are we going to buy a player to compensate, or is Jovinho supposed to be that person? Is Aaron Ramsey the one developing? We don't know, but there's no impression to me that things are settled, that we really know where we're going to be in terms of a team with the first game so close. So I would have liked the Fabregas situation to have been given an internal deadline of the end of July, and Barcelona to have been informed of this quite, you know, firmly, and then say, okay, well, if you haven't bought him by the 1st of August, he's staying another year. And I mean, Fabregas may not like that, but he's being paid a damn sight more money than I'm ever going to earn, and frankly it's about time he started earning it by performing for the club that's paying his wages. So I would like to see Fabregas playing in a Champions League qualifier to make sure we get through the damn thing. I'd like to see him playing in the league games to make sure we start off as well as possible and sod the consequences in terms of his value, because frankly he's under a long contract. Barcelona, if they're not going to meet the valuation, and they've had it all summer to do so, can go take a running jump. I don't care if Fabregas is dispirited. He'll get over it and play a season's football soon enough, because sulking for a year isn't going to do him any favours. So I don't think he would sulk if that happened. However, Arsenal being Arsenal, they will hang on till August the 31st. They'll sell him for less than they want for him, which they could have done already, and they won't have time to spend the money in the market to strengthen the squad.
Mark, I mean, what's your stance? I mean, I think, you know, bearing in mind his comments in the first programme last year, he made it clear that he didn't want to talk about the fact that he's been kept at this club forever, and it would appear that he's going to leave. Sammy Nasri, any chance of staying, or has he essentially tried to reopen a path of Emmanuel Adebayor contract renegotiation?
Totally, and I think the fact that there was reports coming out, I know it's only hearsay, about how he had a bust up with Wenger quite recently. There's probably some truth to that. He probably wants out. He's probably sick of the club playing hardball and he wants to go. And I think what's key to this is that when you look at Fabregas and Nasri probably will be gone, looking at Bentner potentially going as well, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it will be. Aboué potentially on his way out too. Who that probably means is we're only going to get one or two people in maximum to replace these players. If you think those players combined are probably looking at what, 60, 70 million pounds. So 30 million pounds for Fabregas, 20 million for Nasri, 10 million for Bentner, 5 million for Aboué potentially. Yep. That's a lot of money. And are we really going to go out? That means this season, once again, I can guarantee every single podcast listener out there now, if those transfers go through, once again, we would have made a profit in the transfer market. But we're only going to sign one or two more players maximum. I'm pretty confident that once again we're going to be in credit rather than in debit. Mm. And I think that is disgusting. What's happened to this so-called £40 million war chest? It doesn't exist. And if it does exist, it's gross negligence on Wenger's part. And it's sometimes very pessimistic. Mm. We're here at the start of the season. We've got three people on the panel not being very optimistic at all. But I honestly think it's really hard to be. You know, we're going to get comments and complaints about where's this pessimism coming from? But how can we not be knowing that once again we come fourth last year, the only club that can come fourth in a two-horse race, and we're probably going to be in credit in the transfer market? It's disgusting.
It's been going on for such a long time as well. I keep hearing about this. It's either £35 million or £40 million in that war chest that never gets touched.
On paper, you know, the club have sold nobody, and they've bought players to the value of £27 million. So technically, you're absolutely correct. Obviously, that will be blown apart when Fabregas and Nasri do go. But at the moment, you know, Ivan Gazidis could be here and say, "Well, we spent £27 million, and we've got to pay those guys for the next year as well out of this war chest we have." So we're acting responsibly, and we spent a lot more than we've received this summer. So the story at the moment, you know, is that we are spending money. However,
that could change.
It will change, and the reality is we're spending in the wrong places. That's the worst thing of all. We should have bought two centre backs before we bought any bloody attacking player.
So, Kev, can I ask this? So, the war chest is not just about transfer fees; it's also about wages as well.
It's the first year of the wages of the guys they buy.
And you know why? I would like to throw this question out there: why are all our fees, our transfer fees, paid undisclosed?
Well, normally it is because there are add-ons, so the exact fee is not always fixed. However, what they could say is we've paid this much now and there is more to be paid depending on appearances or whatever. However, the one thing about Arsenal's accounts is they like to keep them mysterious, so the fortunate thing about this is the other club normally says, "Oh, we sold him for this, so we bought him for this." So the truth gets out. It's just Arsenal's accounting is shrouded in mystery, and frankly, a lot of potential abuse there. Frankly, but nothing I can ever prove.
Interesting that you sort of raised that as on Monday when we came out and announced the signing of Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain from Southampton, that we were not disclosing the film by the fee by any stretch of the imagination. However, by all accounts, someone chief in charge over at Southampton said it was something like £12 or £15 million plus £3 million add-on.
12 rising to 15.
What do you think, Joe? Do you make him the purchase of the brand new Theo Walcott, or have we basically thrown a little bit too much money?
It sounds to me like we've thrown a little bit too much money at Oxlade-Chamberlain, but only purely because I haven't seen him in action. But based on the fact that he's now with Southampton, or a lower division club than Theo Walcott was with, that Southampton was one tier up at least.
And I saw Theo play prior to him joining Arsenal, and this guy was good, you know, at that level. I mean, obviously faster than anyone else. But not only that, he scored an amazing goal. When I just saw him, I didn't know who he was. I went, what was that? I mean, how could you score from that angle? It was impossible. It was absolutely impossible. So based on that, I thought it was worth 7 million, because I've never seen anyone do that, never. And so this Oxlade-Chamberlain better be good. He better be twice as good as Theo. And I very much doubt. I know there's been a lot of doubters in this room about Theo's ability, but the guy scored a hat-trick for England. In my book, he hasn't done too badly in his career, even if he hung up his boots right now. He's not done great, but he's not done badly. And I think he's been worth the money we paid, which was 7 to 9 million undisclosed, as always.
Well, Mark, I mean, one of the things that the club have come out with at Arsenal.com is saying quite clearly that this kid, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, is going to form a part of the first team squad. Which grown-up player do you drop? Is it going to be Arshavin? Is it going to be Nasri? Is it going to be Walcott? Is Walcott going to be converted to a centre-forward, which Wenger said for the last 4 years? What do you reckon?
Do you know what? I've got no idea. And how do you pronounce the new Japanese player's name, Joe? You were telling me the right pronunciation earlier on.
I'm going to try Rio. It's not Rio. It's Rio.
His name is Rio.
Miyuchi. So, obviously, I've also heard that he's now going to be fighting for first team place as well. So we will be seeing a new look Arsenal. I've no doubt about that.
Hang on a minute. Just because Oxlade-Chamberlain is part of the squad, Theo Walcott was part of the squad for the first 6 months at the club before he went to the World Cup finals. His extended first team action was a warm up against Birmingham without coming onto the pitch.
But don't you think, Kev, for £12 million, there'd be clamours to actually play the kid? So he will make Carling Cup appearances, he will appear in the FA Cup.
So he's not going to boot anyone out of the first team.
No. Right. And there will be injuries, won't there, at some point in the season, and he will be given a chance with how fragile our squad is.
I've no idea is the short answer to that.
The injuries that we have, I've got no doubt if we play a couple of league games before Christmas.
Right, well, so he's not booting anyone out of the first team. I mean, it seems a hell of a lot of money. However, you know, the jury's out until we actually see the kid play. So, and I haven't been watching Southampton, frankly. It's a gamble, and hopefully it'll pay off, but it is a huge gamble.
It's slightly worrying that Arsenal appear to have gone for three players this summer so far who no one else is interested in, whether we're talking about Jovinho, Oxlade-Chamberlain or Carl Jenkinson, but hey, that's kind of where we are. On a slightly more comedic note to sort of finish it up.
You.
Yeah, well, do you find it amusing or sad that the only grown-up professional player at Arsenal who hasn't posed for any of the singular player photographs being Manuel Almunia?
If he can't find a new club, even though he's been offered being offered on a free transfer, what are your stance, Mark?
Do you know what? Surely there must be some form of job for him there. Whether it's putting out the cones, whether it's working in the Arsenal world of sport, or the brand new shop. The guy's been a loyal servant to the club. Yes, he's been the shittiest goalkeeper I've ever had misfortune to watch in my flipping life, but there must be a role for him somewhere. Let's have him as a new Gunnosaurus, the new mascot. We can chuck stuff at his head, he can fire t-shirts and cannon at us, it'll be absolutely brilliant. There's got to be a role for the bloody Spanish waiter. That's it, I've got it now. He can come dressed every home match as Manuel from 40 Towers, he had the whole outfit, can accompany Gunnosaurus, it could be hilarious. He can fall over in a comedy way, it'll be absolutely brilliant. Done.
I mean, I'm afraid what it indicates is that he's been vastly overpaid, because the reason that a club won't take him on is because obviously can't agree wages with anybody, because he would have to take a significant fall in wages. I don't actually know how long his contract is. I suspect it's a year. Worst case scenario, it's 2 years. But unless Arsenal are going to actually pay him to go, as West Ham did with Freddie Ljungberg, he is going to be on Arsenal books until the end of his contract, claiming a very nice salary, which is way above what he was ever worth. But Arsene Wenger made a calamitous error there. No excuse for it once the Manchester United game in 2005 had occurred. To give that keeper a contract renewal after that was gross negligence. We've been paying the price for a long time.
Well, on the subject of players with you know, ridiculous salaries, well, one of my favourite players, it has to be said, is a player with essentially his salary on the back of his shirt, being 52, Nicholas Bentner. What do we think about us keeping him instead of Marouane Chamakh? Anyone?
Oh, well, basically, at the moment, he is a superior option because Chamakh's form is completely gone. Even the summer break hasn't improved him. So the only reason I suspect he's still at the club is Wenger's stubbornness. But if there's a French club interested in taking Chamakh, we would be in profit having got him on a free and take the money and keep Bentner.
But he started off so promising.
And what happened, Joe? What happened?
Well, this is the big mystery.
Well, it doesn't matter if it's a mystery. It's a fact that his form went to pot and he's
and
about...
And he's not come back, you're right.
You're going to get rid of... Get rid. I mean, the worst thing is he might be lining up against Udinese. But I'm sure we can discuss that in the next podcast.
Okie doke. Well, we now have to take a short break before continuing in our next podcast. But as always, just to mention that if you do want to email us about anything related to the podcast, our address is goonapodcast@gmail.com. So with that, as usual, thanks to our sponsors.
Goonashirts.com.
And it's goodbye from Mark.
Goodbye, everyone.
From Joe.
Sayonara.
And Kevin.
You got that right, Joe. And goodbye, listeners.
We'll be back soon. I'm your host, David Udo, and thank you for listening.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company. Well, hey!